Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
And now WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. We'll have a foliage report about the changing leaves because it feels like fall out there today. Let's see where we're going today. I have a lot of questions and opinions and would like to get your opinions and comments with answers to those questions that I have today. And the program is going to be filled with these sort of questions. As you sort of skim the news, these questions just pop out at you. And so if you want to join our conversation, you have an opinion, you have a comment, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let me just give you a heads up what's coming up on the program today. We'll start out the program with a question. And the question is this: is Donald Trump trying to lose the election? Or even put it another way, can Hillary Clinton win this election? I mean, polls have them close, and she isn't a popular candidate, but neither is Donald Trump. And the reason I'm asking this question is that you're starting to see different news analysis, different commentary pop up in various publications wondering what the heck is Donald Trump doing. So the question I have coming out of the blocks this morning is, Donald Trump trying to lose this election? Or let's just flip that around. Can Hillary Clinton win this election? Then we'll turn to a subject that's completely different than politics. We'll speak with Jeff Spaulding, Chancellor of the Vermont State College System, and we'll ask him what's going on at our state colleges. And then we'll return to your phone calls. And I'd be interested on a bunch of different questions that are out there in the news. The first is Bruce Listman, who's running for governor and running against Phil Scott in the Republican primary. Is Bruce Listman helping his cause or hurting his cause by sending out negative campaign material against Phil Scott? That's one of the questions in the second hour. The next question, should the legislature override the governor's veto of the energy bill? The legislature is back today to either override the governor's veto or fix the bill. Be interested in your comments. And sort of wrapping up, a couple of more questions. These Donald Trump protests, especially the ones that turned violent, are they actually helping or hurting Donald Trump? And if we have time, news reports are that the Sanders camp wants Debbie Wasserman Schultz to be gone, to be dumped as any part of a unity effort. Should the Democrats dump Debbie Wasserman Schultz? And also, we have a packed show with your participation, with a guest. We have Kevin Squire, who will check in with us and give us his thoughts about the Bernie Sanders campaign. So, the first question out of the blocks, what the heck is Donald Trump doing? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Is Donald Trump trying to lose the election? Or let's just put it another way. Can Hillary Clinton win this election? And how does she do that? And the reason I'm asking that question is that it seems that Donald Trump lately, in the last 2 weeks, is doing everything possible to hand the presidency to Hillary Clinton. which, by the way, only bolsters the belief by some, and these are the sort of conspiracy theorists, that this has been the plan all along. As the conspiracy theory goes, Trump and Clinton are working hand in hand to make sure she wins. I know this sounds bizarre, but stay with me, and I'll explain what some of these conspiracy theorists believe. His role, Donald Trump's role in the conspiracy, is to attract a base of supporters in the Republican Party so that he can win the nomination and at the same time alienate a large segment of the American population so it's impossible for him to win in the general election. And for her part, Clinton needs to be successful in fending off the challenge of Bernie Sanders, a progressive socialist, while remaining presidential. And for those that believe in this conspiracy theory, think about it. They're both carrying out their roles exactly as planned, especially if you look at Trump this last couple of weeks. You know, the conspiracy theorists will say, look at Trump. Look at his past political support of Bill and Hillary Clinton. Look at the fact that he frequently praised her, and he attended the wedding of Clinton's daughter. And if you think about it, we've had this sort of strategy before in Vermont. If this strategy is true, think about this. This would be the Fred Tuttle strategy on steroids. You nominate a candidate that has no intention of winning and, in fact, wants his opponent to win. You know, for those who don't remember, for young Vermonters or those who recently have moved to Vermont, Fred Tuttle was a longtime Vermont farmer, and he was the typical longtime Vermont farmer with the suspenders and the plaid top and the blue jeans. And he was this, you know, just, he was a lovable guy, actually. And one of the things that he did, he ran on the Republican ticket for U.S. Senator against Senator Patrick Leahy. And he won the nomination. But as soon as he won the nomination, he declared his support for Vermont's senior senator after he secured the nomination. So, you know, what is Trump doing? These conspiracy theorists think that he's trying to throw the election for Hillary Clinton. And that's why, you know, they talk about this. And one of the things you have to ask, this past couple of weeks, Donald Trump has done everything possible to hand the election to Hillary Clinton. For example, you know, the derogatory comments about a judge of Mexican heritage who ruled against him in a case dealing with Trump University, or attacking a very popular Hispanic Republican governor in New Mexico as not doing a very good job. So I guess my question, well, I know my question today is Donald Trump trying to lose the election? Or put it another way, can Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump in an election? And how would she do that? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. I mean, Hillary Clinton, in normal times, it's not that Hillary Clinton is a formidable opponent. She's terribly flawed. And in fact, the Republicans should be eager to run against her. She could still lose this election in spite of all Donald Trump's deep faults. But I'm wondering, how does she win this election? And secondly, is Donald Trump really trying to lose this election? Let's go to Rama in Williamstown. Rama, you're on open mic.
Yeah, and 2 points that you raised, Mike. One is about Trump and the other about Hillary Clinton and can she win. And starting with the Clinton bit, you're going to see the numbers change a lot on polling now that Bernie Sanders is officially kind of out of the running for the Democratic nomination. And my suspicion, and it's actually more than a suspicion, is that the numbers are going to slide more and more into Hillary Clinton's favor, because when the choice comes down to being between Clinton and Trump, most people are going to look and say Clinton, warts and all. And I say this because, no, Donald Trump, son of Sarah there, is not trying to lose the election. This is what Donald is. He is a narcissistic bully wannabe who just rips and reads his topics and his subjects and his agenda right off the internet and from Twitter feeds. Mm-hmm. So this is who he is. This is what he is. And people that support him, listen, it's a variety of people. And for all of those well-intentioned people, all I can say is I'm sorry. But, you know, this is who you decided to support.
Thanks, Rama, for your phone call. What we're asking this morning is, Donald Trump trying to lose the election? Or let's just flip that around a little bit. Is Hillary Clinton in the position to win this election, and how is she going to do that? Rama talked about that the polls will probably start to widen a little bit now that Bernie Sanders is no longer going to be a factor in the race. And that's probably going to be the case. I think she gets a bump. Hillary Clinton gets a bump in the next few weeks because she has secured the nomination. The one thing that Rama said, and I tend to agree with him, I mean, how do you explain Donald Trump? If you're not a conspiracy theorist, if you don't believe, as I don't believe, if you don't believe that he's not trying to throw the election, then how do you explain what he's doing out there? And that's a question I think we're going to need a lot of people to talk about, because to me it's simple. Donald Trump is really thin-skinned, and he's a political novice who is long on rhetoric. And I talked a little bit about this with Bob Ney yesterday. He's long on rhetoric, but he's really short on public policy. And these characteristics got him through the primary season, but I think it's going to be an extremely vulnerable situation for him in the general election. And to be honest, I don't believe in this conspiracy theory that he is purposely trying to take a dive in this election, because it doesn't serve his interests. I mean, with an election loss, his brand, and his brand means everything to Donald Trump. It would suffer a major setback. His whole enterprise is not built on cash. It's built on brand. And if this was true, if these conspiracy theorists were true, that he's trying to throw the election, that he's trying to take a dive in this election to make sure that Hillary Clinton wins the nomination, if this political scam was discovered, it would destroy our political system as we know it. No, the reason that Donald Trump is doing what he's doing is that, again, he's thin-skinned and he's long on rhetoric and short on policy. And one thing I've observed about Donald Trump, there's a lot that's about him, not about the country or a core political philosophy or even his supporters. If you're a judge and you rule against him, or a governor that doesn't support him, or a journalist, for example, that asks tough questions, it gets personal real, real fast with Donald Trump. And I got a feeling that the more that Americans see that, the less support that's going to come his way. You know, his temperament, politics is kind of different. And I understand that people want outsiders. But think about this. I mean, his temperament may be suited for the rough and tumble world of where he's familiar with, the urban real estate development area. But as president, it would mean giving think about this. It would mean giving the government's political and military and spy operations, giving him that power, giving Donald Trump that power. And his personality is that he dislikes being challenged, and he's hell-bent on getting back at those that he feels has wronged him. So it is interesting how this is going to play out. The question I'm asking today is, Donald Trump trying to lose the election, or put another way, is Hillary, how can Hillary Clinton win this election given her unfavorable rating? Let's go to Dale in Burlington. Dale, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I think I said on your show last week that Donald needs psychiatric help. I still think he does. I don't think he ever had any intention of winning this election. Said that last week. I just don't think he ever had any intention of it, and he just wanted to be the master showman, and the master showman has taken him this far, and I can't see him going very far against Hillary, and I'll use a little bit of evidence with that. In California this week, it looked like Bernie was closing in and had a great shot at knocking Hillary off her throne in California. Well, as we saw the results, Hillary really slammed Bernie, and I think that same result is going to occur in any state that comes up with, you know, Hillary and Donald. I see Hillary beating him by a pretty good margin, and I really hate to say that because I don't like either one of them, and I certainly don't like Hillary, but I cannot put up with Donald's attitudes and the way he's treating people, his, I'll call them racist remarks, his degrading remarks directed towards John McCain. Politically, I don't a lot of times agree with John McCain, and I thought he made a horrible choice when he was running for president by picking Palin. I thought that showed a lot about McCain's presidential ability. But for what Trump said about McCain way back early in this process, that was just totally outrageous and disgusting, and it demeans the office of president, and I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Dale, for your phone call. We're talking today about, is Donald Trump trying to lose the election, given what he's been doing the last few weeks? Or put another way, can Hillary Clinton win this election, and how will she do that? You know, Hillary Clinton is not really a formidable candidate and not really a formidable opponent. And you know, like I said before, she's terribly flawed as a candidate. In fact, the Republicans should run against her. You know, and she could still lose this election in spite of Trump's deep faults. But she took a smart step recently by engaging Trump on foreign policy, instead of going down the rabbit hole that Senator Marco Rubio fell into when he tried to be as big a bully as Trump. That didn't work. And by the way, anybody that tries that, it won't work. You know, what I found fascinating to me was that Trump's response to her criticism on foreign policy was remarkably weak. It was alarmingly weak, actually. And it's a powerful reminder that if Clinton continues to attack his policy positions instead of him, and he continues to attack her personally instead of her policy positions, I think Dale's right. I think she starts gaining, and I think Rama's right. I think she starts gaining and gaining and gaining. And one thing we'll get into later is the violent protesters and how that can sort of derail Hillary Clinton, in my opinion, during this election. Look, at the end of the day, this election is not about who is the best candidate. Let's put that aside. I mean, the unfavorables of both of these candidates are sky high. Most Americans view Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton unfavorably. So the question is, who's going to be least objectionable? Which, as an aside, I got to say, how did we ever get to this point? How did we ever get a process that gets us to the point where we're picking who's least objectionable? But it's probably true that Donald Trump is helping Hillary Clinton, not the way that the conspiracy theorists have ventured, that this was all pre-planned, that it was he's going to take a dive in this election, that it, the fix was in all the time for Hillary Clinton. It's not all of that. Rather, that he's failing as a candidate. Right now, he's failing as a candidate. And that ultimately may be what Hillary Clinton is counting on. We're going to turn completely away from politics. We're going to talk about Vermont State Colleges in just a moment with Jeb Spaulding, the chancellor of the Vermont State College System. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to have in our WDEV studios Jeb Spaulding, chancellor of the Vermont State College System. Good morning, Jeb.
Good morning, Mike. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm great that I've had the opportunity to have you here twice now. This is the second time.
Yeah.
One of the things
you're still here, I'm still here. So that's a good sign.
That is good. You have been publicly urging high school students to enroll in college courses. This is known as dual enrollment.
Right.
Why the push?
Well, I can think of three important reasons why dual enrollment makes sense. And what it is now under state law, which I didn't have anything to do with promoting that law, but under state law, all high school students are eligible to take two college courses for credit at no cost to the student during their high school career, either their junior or senior year. The reason that's important is that it's been shown nationally that students that take dual enrollment courses are more likely to go on to college. So Vermont has a problem in that whereas we have very high graduation rates from high school, we have low college enrollment rates. And, you know, even if you just look at one college where most of the early college, the dual enrollment courses are taken, Community College of Vermont, the students that take the dual enrollment courses at colleges are basically going to college at much, you know, continuing on to college at much higher rates. So the average rate for the whole state is about 60% of high school graduates are going on to post-secondary education. Kids that go to dual enrollment and take dual enrollment courses go at a rate of 80% or better. So one, it increases aspiration to go to college. That's most important. Two, it is a way of like making sure that high school students, you know, really get a productive senior year. People that you hear from that have had high school students, oftentimes their last year they're kind of like just in neutral for their high school senior year. And so, being able to offer something that's stimulating for students is a very good thing. And the third thing is it actually lowers the cost of going to college. We actually have two sort of dual enrollment and another one called early college that allows high school students to actually combine their senior year of high school with their entire first year of college. And I'm familiar with one student that actually took two dual enrollment courses in their junior year and then did the early college in their senior year of high school and started at Castleton University well into their sophomore year. Now, that cuts down their cost of going to college by 25% as far as tuition goes. So, you know, one, it increases aspiration. Two, it keeps people motivated and stimulated in their junior and senior year. And three, it cuts down on the cost of college. So we're very enthusiastic about this program. It's really only been sort of revamped in the last couple of years to where people are using it, and the increase is fairly dramatic.
I'm curious about the level of the number of people going to college after high school graduation. You mentioned that we have a very high graduation rate in high school, and then it drops off dramatically after high school for those going to college. One of these, the dual enrollment obviously helps. Are there factors in there that's causing that?
Well, there are a number of factors, Mike. I like to point to one that I think is the largest. And that is that Vermont's low level of state support for public higher education leads Vermont to be having the second highest in-state tuition in the country. The only other state that has higher in-state tuition for public higher education is our neighbor to the east, New Hampshire, where they fund at it also. You know, we are in the basement of a league of our own in terms of state support for public higher education. What's the result of that? Well, you know, I mean, that low state support translates to high tuition, because that's the only other place you can get the money. And when you have high tuition, you know, that is an inhibitor to people wanting to go on to post-secondary education. So, you know, I mean, to me, that's linked. There are other factors. I mean, you know, certainly the families that, you know, aren't encouraging their kids to go on to college is a factor. You know, dysfunctional families is a factor. People thinking, gee, do I want it? Am I getting my money's worth? You know, there's an issue there. And in Vermont, you know, we really actually have to work hard on developing additional post-secondary options beyond just degrees, too. So that would be, you know, apprenticeship programs, meaningful credentials. I would personally argue for more associate's degrees, two-year degrees that are actually very career-oriented. And that's something that the state colleges are working hard on, is to increase our repertoire in terms of the certificates and credentials we offer and our associate's degree programs, too.
You hit on something that I think I read a couple of years ago, that if you can get that first generation to go to college, the first generation of people going to college, that their kids will probably go to college, and then their kids will probably go to college. But the trick is getting that first generation to
go. Yeah, it's absolutely true. And 'cause the converse is that, you know, if your children don't go to college, the chances that your grandchildren will go to college are substantially lower. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, there have been a number of fairly high visibility, well-respected, high credibility folks around this country, economists and academics, that will say that actually the dividing line between the haves and the have-nots is increasingly some level of post-secondary education, hopefully a degree. And, you know, it's not only economics, but it's, you said about their continuation rates, their participation as select board members, their participation in the responsibility of voting in elections, their health outcomes are all actually correlated to whether you go on to post-secondary education or not.
How do you do that, Jeb? How do you get to those individuals that are sort of first generation?
Well, you know, I'm going to go back to where we started. I mean, the dual enrollment program is one of the state's most powerful tools to help students that otherwise might not go on to college to try it and find out that actually they are cut out for college and they can do it. And oftentimes, you know, they're coming from family situations where that isn't encouraged. There's a lot of angst involved with that, and getting them involved in their high school careers is very successful. And, you know, really in that regard, I mean, and it's one of the questions that policymakers ask about dual enrollment, taking those two courses that you're eligible for, or the early college where you can combine your senior year of high school and first year of college. Hey, you know, is this only for the high flyers, or are the first generation potentially, you know, students from families that have nobody's been to college, free and reduced lunch type, are they taking advantage too? And increasingly they are, but not in the same percentages as the overall high school population. So that's an issue we're working on. Our best friends in that regard are teachers, school counselors, and I would include the VSAC outreach counselors in that too, where you're out working with families. We also have the what we call the TRIO programs, which are like, you know, Upward Bound, where you're working with families and students in their middle and high school years. Those kind of people that are becoming more and more informed about the dual enrollment options are our best friends in getting the word out. And I think you will see the usage of dual enrollment increase in those economically disadvantaged classes.
We're speaking with Jeb Spalding, Chancellor of the Vermont State College System. One of the things, if you want to join our conversation, please give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. I got so many questions, I jumped right into the next question before I asked for a call.
Well, that's okay.
Is this a trend that we're going to see now? More and more cooperation between higher ed and high schools?
I hope so. I think you're seeing that around the country, and you know, we're kind of, I think, in the first wave of that kind of collaboration, but it's happening in other parts of the country too, and it's important, and it leads into other areas as well as like, well, how can colleges help ensure that the students that are graduating from high school are prepared for college? Mm-hmm. And you know, we've got a long way to go in that regard, obviously. And you know, I mean, some people say, well, you know, leave them alone, you know, just let them go through high school. But increasingly, people are looking to say, well, what we want to do is become more productive. You know, we want to get the education in the least amount of time we can. And as I said earlier, that's one of the major advantages of dual enrollment and early college is that it can cut down the cost of going to college significantly. And I think that's becoming increasingly important for families.
Smaller colleges across the country are struggling. You know, some well-known colleges have been forced to shut down. What's the greatest challenge that you have at Vermont State College
system? Well, the greatest challenge we have, and you're right, I mean, a place like as a former deputy state treasurer and secretary of administration, you're very familiar with Moody's Investors Service, and Moody's has predicted that, you know, a fairly significant percentage of your small private colleges will be non-existent here in the next decade. And there was one fairly well-known college out in Long Island that decided to close down last week. Pine Manor down in Massachusetts was put on probation by the accrediting agency. And they're all facing the same major challenge, Mike, and that is demographics. There are fewer people graduating from high school in Vermont and other northern New England states now than there were, you know, 100 years ago. And that, you know, since we're all very dependent on tuition, and, you know, private colleges, smaller ones even more so because they don't get any state support. I mean, they get federal grants and so forth, which is significant, but so reliant on tuition when the number of students graduating from high school has declined rather precipitously over the last decade or two, that makes it very difficult. And, you know, the way people respond to that is like by, you know, intense competitive activities. So they're, you know, I mean, the I've read stories that say the average discount off of the announced tuition at independent colleges is sometimes, you know, probably about 50%, sometimes as high as 60%. And the question is, well, how long can you do that? And it's a challenge. So for us, like other colleges, the demographics, and that means like your enrollment might be going down, or what can we do to actually maintain or increase enrollment? And we have six key strategies at the state colleges, five of which are intended to address that. The sixth one is that we've got to do a more effective manner of explaining why state support for public higher education is just as important as it is for K-12 education. And in this day and age, an eighth grade education is not enough, and a 12th grade education is not enough. And the Vermont State Colleges are the extension of the public schools into the post-secondary years, and we need to get state support. All the rest of them are strategic priorities are intended to actually increase our enrollment. And we do that by, you know, I mean, we already mentioned that only 60% of the students that are graduating from high school are going on to college, and that's a problem. And you know, I'm using college loosely there. So, you know, a bachelor's or master's fine, but an associate's degree fine, and there are some credential programs that are fine too. So, but going on to post-secondary education is important. If we can move that dial somewhat, that helps. We're working hard to improve our retention rates so that they just don't show up at the door, but they actually graduate, and hopefully in a timely manner. That'll help our bottom line. We're really trying to make sure people recognize the quality that we offer at the Vermont State Colleges, and it's fine. In a small state like Vermont, you're going to see students that are going to want to go experience another part of the world. But oftentimes we see people going out and paying out-of-state tuition or independent college tuition much higher than they would if they stayed at Johnson or Lyndon or Vermont Tech and Castleton, whatever. And we need to get the word out about our quality. And we have other ones too, but for the sake of time, that's as far as I'll go with that one.
We're speaking with Jeb.
I tend to start running on.
We're speaking with Jeb Spalding, who's the chancellor of the Vermont State College System. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. The burning question that I want to ask you is, why did you change the name of Castleton from college to university?
Well, I'm going to give you this, maybe the second answer first. Okay.
Okay.
You know, marketing does matter. I mean, that's a fact. And you know, when Fletcher Allen changed its name to the UVM Medical Center or whatever the formal name there is, a lot of people gave him a hard time for that. But the fact of the matter is, it increased their economic base substantially. So people do those kind of things. And in higher education, I told you, it's a pretty competitive world out there right now. We do have to think about our marketing and our branding, and that's important. With Castleton, you know, and people sometimes say, well, what changed at Castleton when the name changed from Castleton State College to Castleton University? And actually, nothing changed immediately. The name change reflected what's happened at Castleton in the previous decade. And if people haven't been to Castleton over the last 10 or 15 years, they probably wouldn't recognize it. I was with somebody this weekend at a wedding of a nephew, and they were from Massachusetts, and their son came up and played lacrosse at Castleton University and saw what their athletic facilities are like now. And if you haven't seen them, it's pretty amazing. It's a beautiful athletic facility down there. So over the last 10 years, they've evolved. They have, you know, it might be 28 now, NCAA sports. They have a growing list of graduate programs, international students. And the name change at Castleton was more to reflect what they had evolved into than on the day they changed the name, they were going to be something else. It also is somewhat aspirational that they're still wanting to increase their graduate programs international and have all the accoutrements of a small university.
We're speaking with Jeb Spalding, Chancellor.
And I might say, if I could,
yes,
it's a increasingly unpredictable environment in higher education. That's the disclaimer. But you know, Castleton's deposits for this coming fall are up like 15%. Okay. That's a good thing, by the way. If we're relying on tuition, having an increase in enrollment when the number of high school students are going down is a challenge. I think we're working pretty hard to make sure that we can maintain. And I know I shouldn't go on, but I just want to make sure people know, because you often hear these things. It's a challenging time, and we mentioned that there are colleges that are not going to continue to exist. The Board of Trustees and the Chancellor are totally committed to making sure that all of our campuses are economically viable for the long run. So if you're thinking about one of our state colleges, don't worry.
Well, you just took one of my questions right away from me.
Okay, sorry.
We're speaking with Jeff Spalding, Chancellor of the Vermont State College System. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about young Vermonters staying in Vermont. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. With me in studio, in our WDEV studio, is Jeb Spalding, Chancellor of the Vermont State College System. And we've been discussing dual enrollment, but I sort of want to switch to a broader topic, Jeb, and that is, how do you get Vermont young people to stay in Vermont after college graduations?
Well, I mean, getting them to stay in Vermont for college would be a good start. And there's no question, Mike, that in states where there is a high level of state support and low, you know, conversely, low tuition, students tend to stay in their home state a lot more. I mean, if you're from Texas or, you know, some of these states where they have very low in-state tuition because their state colleges and universities are supported largely by the state as a public institution, their students tend to stay home. In Vermont, they tend to leave. Beyond that, though, so I had to get that in there. And, you know, you often hear about, gee, what are we doing? Why aren't we keeping our kids at home? Well, one of the reasons they're not staying at home is because it's not really all that much cheaper to go to one of their public in-state colleges than it is to go out of state when the discounting that's taking place on tuition is out there. After that, of course, it's all about the jobs and the opportunities out there. And, you know, I mean, I remember back in the 1980s, you know, which is a long time ago, in the 90s, talking to the state archivist, you remember a guy named Greg Sanford, and he told me that it was started around the time of the Civil War, where we had people always going out for other opportunities. And when you're a state of $600,000 people, you're never going to have the breadth of opportunities that larger states do. And there's a certain amount of that we have to just recognize the reality, the situation we face. Beyond that, though, all of the talk we hear about what do we need to do to make this a good place for entrepreneurs and larger businesses is what we need to do to keep students in state. I think it's the main. We have the quality of life, so it's about having the full range of job opportunities for young people.
Where are you going in the future with the Vermont State College system?
Well, the first thing we want to do is make sure, as I mentioned earlier, that all of our campuses, that would be, starting up in the Northeast with Linden and Johnson and then Vermont Tech and the CCV with 12 locations around the state and increasingly online opportunities and Castleton as well, are all there for the decades and generations to come. So that's our bottom line. After that, everything is on the table. I mean, do you need a chancellor? We should ask that question. We have to ask all of those questions. And what we're doing, Mike, is we are continuing to push the envelope on what can we do to reduce administrative expense. So right now in the chancellor's office, for example, we do the payroll for all of the state colleges. We do student billing for the state colleges. We do legal services. And we're looking for what else can we do that will actually not have us have to recreate the same function, five times when you only have a total of like 12,000 students in the whole enterprise. So we're continuing to do that. We're also looking at what kind of strategic alliances we can create with pairs of colleges, and sometimes even more than pairs. So the Board of Trustees has asked the presidents of Johnson and Linden College to really explore what kind of alliances would make sense for those two colleges. We've also asked the presidents of Community College of Vermont and Vermont Technical College to do the same thing. And I think in the coming months, we will see what kind of opportunities arise from that effort. But we are looking at what we can do to squeeze administrative expense out at the system level, and then what kind of benefits can we get with pairs of colleges. And, it's ultimately all about making sure that with our limited dollars, those dollars are spent on the things that matter to students. What we want is access to affordable, quality education around the state. And one of the reasons, sometimes people say, gee, if you started over again, would you have, two public colleges in the northeast quadrant of the state? I really can't answer that. But what I can say is that they're there now, and these are colleges that are access points that for people that, really are, we have 50% of them are the first in their family to go to college, and they often are of very limited means, and they can't afford room and board. So they're commuting to get their college. And oftentimes, as great as Community College of Vermont is, and it's fantastic, and it is our biggest college, and it's the most affordable option we have, and they have high quality. But in many ways, a place like Linden State College operates like a community college in other states. In states like Tennessee and Oregon, for example, that have tuition-free community and technical college, those community colleges are more like full junior colleges. They have a very wide array of degree programs. They have athletics. They have residential facilities. And our colleges at Linden and Johnson and Castleton do play a multifaceted role. But one of them is the access point for people that otherwise wouldn't be able to afford to go to college.
Does online mean less infrastructure?
It means a lot of different things. So for example, some people have read about these massively online open courses, the MOOCs, which are might have thousands of people in one course all over the world, which are purely online. There's no interaction with the professor at all. When community college does online, you're still in a class with like 15 kids, or no, I shouldn't say kids, 15 students, and there's a lot of interaction. We also have courses that are actually delivered through technology that are live, basically. You're using technology and live. So far is a more promising approach to use a blended education where, we're not doing away with the classrooms or the residential facility, but using online various kinds of technology-delivered education to actually supplement the education that students have, and sometimes make it less expensive, too, which is also important.
What would you urge candidates for governor to do in the area of higher education?
Well, you know, number one, the Vermont State College is a nonpartisan. We don't endorse anybody. One of the candidates for governor, though, Sue Minter, laid out a proposal this week that would offer a tuition-free community and technical college in Vermont for all high school graduates that maintain a 2.5 GPA, grade point average, in their high school career. And if they went on full-time and remained in good academic standing, they could get free community and technical college. Well, I'm glad that one of the candidates has, like, put out a substantive proposal. We often hear, well, yeah, we want to do something for higher education, but they don't say what. I mean, if I were sitting in my own office, would that be exactly what I developed? Probably not, but it's a pretty substantive proposal, and I'm anticipating that other gubernatorial candidates will step up to it, too. So I'm actually pretty optimistic that the importance of public higher education is more of a front burner issue at this time than it's been in the last decade. And I guess I would tell the candidates for governor that, look, if you don't want young people to be leaving the state, if we believe that an educated workforce leads to a more robust economy, then we need to pay attention to public higher education. And in particular, the Vermont State Colleges are the extension of the public schools. Yes, we have our valedictorians, but we're also a place where we welcome students that have struggled in school, struggled in life, and we provide the support systems that allow them to get the kind of education they need. They often become our entrepreneurs. They become the ambulance EMTs. They become our leaders in the legislature. And we are the public school system, and it needs to be supported.
If people wanted to find out more about the Vermont State College system, where would they go?
Pretty simple. If you just go to VSC, Vermont State Colleges, so vsc.edu, you can get linked to what we offer. You can get linked to any one of the colleges right from there.
Thank you, Jeb.
My pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity, Mike.
Jeb Spalding, Chancellor of Vermont State College, who has been in studio and taking time out of his busy day to talk about the Vermont State College system. Coming up, a check-in with Talk Media News, and then your phone calls. And we have a lot of questions that that we want to ponder in terms of national and state politics. Your phone calls are a very important part of this program. And then Ken Squires will check in with us and give his thoughts on the Bernie Sanders campaign. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV Radio News on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Before we turn to our colleagues at Talk Media News, just wanted to give you a preview of what we're going to do. We're going to talk to Talk Media News during this hour. We're also going to take your phone calls on a variety of subjects. One of the subjects that I'm interested in is Bruce Lisman, who's running for governor. Is he helping his cause or hurting his cause by sending out negative campaign material against Phil Scott? And then, of course, the legislature is back in town today. They're back in Montpelier, and they're going to decide whether to override the governor's veto or fix a energy bill that the governor has vetoed. And the question is, should the legislature override the governor's veto of the energy bill? Also, I'm fascinated by what's happening out there, and especially those Trump protesters, especially the ones who have turned violent. Does that help or hurt Donald Trump? I almost said Bernie Sanders. I got Bernie Sanders on the mind because Ken Squire is going to be coming in the next hour and talk about his thoughts about the Bernie Sanders campaign. But first, let's go down to D.C. and let's talk to our colleague, Ellen Ratner. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning. Well, as Victoria Jones would say, I'd love to be a fly on the wall during that Obama-Sanders meeting today at 11:15 Eastern. It's going to be interesting, very interesting. Justin Duckham will be at the White House for that. I'm going to not be, but he will be. And we're going to see whether Bernie Sanders comes out to what's called the stakeout to talk about it afterwards. We don't expect that there will be any endorsements either by Sanders or Obama until after the primary in Washington, D.C., the very last primary on Tuesday.
One of the things that's being reported in the news is that the Sanders camp wants, in terms of unity terms, they want Debbie Wasserman Schultz out of there. And actually, I'm going to ask Ellen, the audience, in the after we get done here, whether Debbie Wasserman Schultz should be ousted as the chair of the Democratic
Party. Well, a lot of people think that she was in the tank for Hillary Clinton. We do know this, that chairs only serve a certain amount of years. And so even if Hillary Clinton were president, although Debbie Wasserman Schultz might get some kind of cabinet position, she certainly is not going to be continuing chair. Whoever comes into the party, in other words, Trump now and Hillary Clinton into the Democratic Party, does get to sort of control the party. The operations of the party take over to whoever the presidential nominee is. Certainly Romney did that last time.
We've been pondering the question in the first half of this program. Is Trump trying to lose the election?
Not at all. Not at all.
The reason this question comes up, and let's take the conspiracy theories away.
You can take all the conspiracy theories you want away or keep them in. Okay? No,
let's take them away. And those conspiracy theories are Trump's working hand in hand with Clinton to hand her to the elections. Let's take that off the table. But in the last week, he said derogatory comments about a judge of Mexican heritage. He's talked about he's attacked a popular Hispanic Republican governor. And so is this Donald Trump being thin-skinned, short on long on rhetoric and short on policy?
Well, when I worked in mental health, we would call him a leaky faucet.
And what does that mean, Ellen?
It means that he tries to control himself as much as possible, but then it just leaks out. It's just like it drips. I don't think he has full control over what he says.
One of the things that's going to happen today is Paul Ryan is pushing a border security bill that has no wall, as Donald Trump has wanted to build on the Mexican border. Is that going to be a problem for Paul Ryan?
Well, it may be a problem for Paul Ryan, but this is what the security people are asking for, and this is why Paul Ryan is taking the position that he is.
And then lastly, Ellen, Israel, major attack in Israel. Do we expect an Israeli response?
Well, the major attack in Israel is one thing. These guys dressed up as Orthodox Jews. The other point, though, is that the head of Hamas called them heroes on a Twitter. That was not a smart move because it will mean that the Israeli forces will try and take him out. I think his days are numbered if they have any control over it, which they probably do.
Is there anything I'm missing?
Well, the only other interesting things are that the Prime Minister of India spoke before a joint session of Congress yesterday. He is basically, he did not really talk about it directly, but indirectly, we know that he was referring to China and the threat from China as well as terrorism, which is supposedly what he talked about. But we also know that India is terrified of China. And if you go up to the Indian border, that certainly is something that I have done, and they are not very happy campers.
Ellen Ratner, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News. And when we come back, we'll take your phone calls on a variety of questions out there. I'm so fascinated by a lot of stuff that's happening in the state and in the country. And I'd be very interested in your take on a few things. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. I've got a lot of things I want to cover today and be interested in your phone calls and your opinions. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Coming out of the blocks, there's a lot of issues I want to get to in the next 45 minutes, but coming out of the blocks, I want to turn to state politics for a minute. And just recently, there have been two mailers at Bruce Lisman. Bruce Lisman is a candidate for governor. He's running against Phil Scott in the Republican primary. He has sent out two mailers which try to link Phil Scott with Governor Shumlin, basically calling Scott the governor's wingman, the wingman, a partner of Shumlin, and implying that if you vote for Scott, it's the same as voting for Shumlin. Now, of course, that will rile Republicans, given the fact that it's easy to say they're not fond of Shumlin. Matter of fact, you know, Shumlin's in the 39% range in terms of recent polls that have come out among all Vermonters, Democrats. You know, among all Vermonters, and I don't know how it breaks down between Democrats, Independents, and Republicans. I suspect Republicans are very against Governor Shumlin. Independents are probably there as well. Is this fair game that Bruce Lisman is doing, sending out these flyers that indicate this strong bond between Shumlin and Scott, or is it negative campaigning? Scott has reacted angrily to this effort, saying basically this is Washington style politics, and his campaign won't do that. His campaign won't stoop to that. But I'd be very interested in your opinion about whether negative campaigning works, and whether the Bruce Lisman negative flyers, the mailing going out, will work. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to David in Burlington. David, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Hey, I've got some thoughts about Bernie Sanders.
Go right ahead.
I have heard so many people suggest that he's going to accept a vice president slot.
I don't believe it.
It's the silliest idea going, because anybody who's been in a room with Bernie Sanders for 5 seconds knows that there are few people in the United States of America who are less temperamentally suited to being anybody's vice president, with the possible exception of Eugene Debs. So here's what I believe is going to happen with Bernie Sanders. He's not going to endorse Jill Stein. He's not going to ruin the whole Democratic Party and elect Donald Trump. I think right about the time that the majority of voters start to pay close attention to this race, he's going to become Hillary Clinton's biggest supporter.
You know, David, I think you're right. I think that's what's going to happen. And not only is he going to help, where he helps is the ability to go around to various states for the Senate and the House as well. And
yes,
that helps her quite a bit.
I think he's really, you know, people talk about, oh, he's going to start a new party now. Well, for goodness sake, he already did that. And anybody who lives in Vermont knows about that pretty well. But it's not a national party. But here he got people thinking about things they weren't used to thinking about. The role of the parties, for instance, which I think are greatly misunderstood. I'm not a political scientist, but I think people just misunderstand the role of the parties in this country.
David, let me ask you this question, because it's in news reports. The Sanders camp purportedly wants Debbie Wasserman Schultz to be gone as part of a unity effort. Should the Democrats can her?
Well, somebody just said, I believe it was Ellen,
yep,
who I really enjoy hearing again, and I think Bob Ney, by the way, is absolutely terrific.
Thank you.
As Ellen pointed out, this is a relatively short-lived position. I think Bernie would like nothing better than to have her leave, but she's going to leave anyway, right?
She'll be at the discretion of if Hillary Clinton is the president, she'll be at the discretion of Hillary Clinton. If Hillary Clinton isn't the president, she's going to be gone anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Bruce Lisman, didn't he begin his campaign for governor by denying that he was going to run for governor?
Good point.
For goodness sake, I mean, look, I'm not the closest follower of state politics, but my goodness, we've seen this guy before. Just watch the movie Spread Fred.
That's you know, Fred's getting a lot of mention today because I brought him up as in the first half hour about, you know, this whole conspiracy theory about people believing that Donald Trump is in this to allow Hillary Clinton to win because they're friends and political allies and this whole conspiracy theory. And I said, before you discount that whole conspiracy theory, remember about Fred Tuttle, who won the nomination and then supported his opponent, Senator Leahy, afterwards.
But, a charming movie I wish everybody in the state would watch. By the way, Trump, if I had only one thing to say today, it would be that people should stop believing Donald Trump doesn't have a chance to become president.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that sensible Vermonters view him as a clown, a charlatan, a demagogue, and worse, a bully, you know, you name it, doesn't mean that everybody gets that. A lot of people just don't pay too close attention. They love the fact that he's correct when he points out the problems this country has, and they think that he's competent, which he's not. He could very easily become our next president.
David, thank you so much for your phone call. Let's go to Bill and Barry. Bill, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. About Bruce Lipsman, as you know, I'm a Phil Scott supporter. But when Bruce was the beginning of the campaign, when he didn't start this, until I got this brochure here, and I've seen it on the news, I've seen it on the TV, his ad. And until that time, I thought it was a good thing that he was in the race because he was coming out with his ideas. And he philosophically has a lot of the same ideas as Phil Scott. But what he did, and it was proven on your program, he did the best thing for Phil Scott's campaign that he could have done. Because when you, like with you and your campaign, anyone who interviews people, if they throw softballs, it doesn't do much. But when they throw hardballs and the candidate answers those hardballs correctly, boy, that helps that person. And you're one of these guys that you throw the hardballs. And in this case, Phil Scott did such a good job of answering all these accusations that Lipsman had that if I had not been a Phil Scott supporter, I would have switched over to it. Now, I want to make one more statement. This kind of adds into the national thing. Philosophically, maybe Phil Scott and Trump agree on some of the issues, but the way they conduct themselves is opposite, totally opposite. Phil Scott is, in my opinion, the perfect candidate, and I think he'd make the perfect governor.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the phone call. The question I'm asking for the next few minutes is, Bruce Lipsman is sending out mailers which try to link Phil Scott with Governor Shumlin, basically calling Scott the wingman of Shumlin, meaning implying that if you vote for Phil Scott, it's the same as voting for Shumlin as governor. Is this fair game or dirty dealing? Is this negative campaigning? Scott has reacted fairly angrily about this, saying, you're not going to say this stuff from his campaign. And secondly, you know, this is Washington-style politics, this negative campaign. Be interested in your opinion. Does negative campaigning work in Vermont? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. The question is, does negative campaigning work in Vermont? You know, it seems to me that there's a couple of things. Negative campaigning does work. But there's a couple of things you've got to do when you do negative campaigning. I mean, it's proven to work across the country. Whether it works in Vermont, I'd be interested in your opinion. But it's proven to have worked across the country, that it takes votes away from a candidate. And one of the things that you have to do when you do negative campaigning is that it's got to be believable. And I just don't think trying to tie Phil Scott to Governor Shumlin works. I don't think people believe it. Be interested if you believe it. But I don't think people believe it. And that's one of the problems I think this mailing does. It doesn't hit the target in terms of believability when you're going to go negative. And usually you drop negative campaigning, you send out these mailers towards the end of a campaign because you're trying to take away votes from your opponent. And you drop this towards the end of the campaign. And the reason you do that is because you don't want blowback as a candidate about your effort to throw mud, to do a negative campaign. So you usually do that at the end. If you're doing it now, people speculate, including me, people speculate if you see something in the polls that make you desperate. And I don't know, but I'm speculating that Bruce Lipsman is seeing poll results that he really needs to do something to knock off the favorability rating of Phil Scott. And that's why these mailings, this negative campaign mailings, have gone out. But what it does, though, to many people, it makes you look desperate when you do this. And that's why you wait to the end. You avoid the blowback. And so I'm asking the question today, does this negative campaign material that Bruce Lipsman is sending out, will it work? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to have sitting right across from me the owner of the station.
Ken Squire. Checking on you.
Ken, what's your thoughts? You know, sort of it's switching now, the campaign for president is switching. Hillary Clinton is the presumptive nominee. Bernie came home tonight. He's headed down to D.C. to meet with the president. What's your thoughts on the Bernie Sanders?
Well here's a thought. I'd love to hear what your audience thinks. See, I hope he stays in. I think that there's great hope that we get some one major thing straightened out, and that's in favor of our democracy and all of us who feel we're getting skipped over with what they're doing. Getting these people, why the hell are they going to have these big conventions and waste a lot of money? They've got it already done, and we know the platform is just wallpaper. But what really counts is to get it where we all feel, and this involves both parties, that our vote counts. And right now, most of us think it was decided before it ever started here in the state of Vermont. Leahy, Dean, all those guys, going to vote for Hillary and the thing. And we didn't have a shot at any of that, did we? And all I can think of is what Bernie really is. What he really is what Benjamin Franklin was in 1776. He was an old guy. Benjamin Franklin was 70 years old. And in those days, he, one of 19 kids, was an old dude. And so everybody says, because Bernie's, 74, this is pretty much the end of his lapse. But all those things that Benjamin Franklin did, he ran a post office, and he was a printer. And he was a scientist, and he did a lot of stuff there. And he fooled around a lot, so said. wasn't one that would pass up the opportunity to stop for a bit of grog now and then. Sounded like a pretty regular fella, but he was a regular fella that invented the Franklin stove, and God knows that that helped this country as much as so many things that don't get done. And he was our first ambassador, was Benjamin Franklin. So he was a pretty thoughtful fellow. We know that about him. And the fact that a guy from Vermont named Bernie Sanders is standing up there, and they'll mess around with all their, well, whether they have minimum wages raised and all the rest. But the fact that he says we've got to straighten out how our vote counts for both parties. And the parties are just a disaster, both of them. They should be ashamed of themselves the way they conduct themselves. That's how I think. I'd love to hear what your audience thinks. But the fact that when we started this country, and you talk about George Washington, well, there was Benjamin Franklin, old dude, and was our first ambassador that we put out in the field.
The Democrats are worried that if Bernie stays in much longer, he's going to do damage to Hillary Clinton.
How can he? Don't you think it's healthy? I mean, the fact that she's there, it gives them something to chew on. But the more important thing is, if he could get to that convention and say, you people have to straighten this thing out. It's on the Democratic side, but we know the Republicans are the same. They all have got this idea about these superdelegates. Where in God's name did that come from? Because that's got nothing to do with you or me. Mm-hmm. And all I can think, because I'm a big Benjamin Franklin fan, because the more I hear about him, I think I'd like to sit down and have a couple of beers with him. But he was the guy that they said brought in the Enlightenment period. Imagine that, 1770. That was Benjamin Franklin. And if anybody's been enlightening us and not talking so much about me, now, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. He said, you know, our system is staggering because everybody thinks it's fixed. Not everybody, of course, but it does feel like it's fixed and that we don't have a say. So he's in there, and that's one of the things that's been his. I can't get over either Fox or MSNBC. They go back all the time about minimum wage, racist remarks. And remember that Benjamin Franklin was a slaveholder. He really was. But he changed. And it was somewhere in the end of the 1850s or in the 1860s, he said, this is a bad deal, and got rid of his slaves and went forward. He was a guy that didn't get stuck somewhere and stay there. And I think that Bernie represents that same kind of American spirit.
Let's go to Forbes. Forbes, you're on open mic. Good morning.
How are you?
Great.
Great. Quick one on Bernie. I had said right from the beginning that Bernie was there to serve a purpose, and he did. He went after that voter group that she couldn't address. He attacked business and industry and banks and whatnot, which she had to stay away from because she needed the contributions from. So I think in the end, he's achieved exactly what he set out to do. And can I move over to Phil Scott?
Sure.
I think the latest material put out by Lisman is really a beneficial thing to Phil Scott. I know quite a few of my friends weren't even going to vote in the primary because they felt Phil was a shoo-in. But since this material has come out, they are now going to participate in the primary. So I think that'll be a very positive thing. When you stop and look at it, Lisman, really, who's he got behind him? Who's he got with him? How's he going to implement anything?
Mm-hmm.
Bill Scott, even some very prominent Democrats have come out and endorsed him. And you're going to have to work with Democrats to get anything straightened out. I think Phil has that ability.
Thanks, Forbes. Thanks for your phone call. Ken, today, Bernie Sanders is going down to the White House, and I suspect the president is going to say to him, let's figure out a way for you to get out. How do you sort of tell the president, no, I'm not getting
well,
out?
Well, Bernie doesn't seem to have much trouble telling people exactly how he feels about what would make the country better. And it's to me, he's operating on a different level. I mean, there's a community spirit in Bernie Sanders that's old-time Vermont. Doesn't give a damn. He'll look you straight in the eye and tell you. And all the others are so polished and they're so puffy. And then there's Trump, and he seems to find a way to get himself in trouble every week. But that Benjamin Franklin thing, you know, always was in opposition to authority. He was always in opposition to religion. He was in big trouble. Anyway, he spoke up like you wish everybody could speak up now and then. And we do need to get our democracy back on the straight and narrow and think that anyone has the opportunity to vote and it counts. And most of us don't think our vote's worth a fig. Huh? I'm leaving now, and I hope I've stirred up trouble. Best I can do.
Thank you so much. Ken Squire will be back in a moment. Yeah. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Tom, you spend time sort of planning out the program, and guess what? We're all over the place in terms of what people want to talk about, and that's okay. That is okay. We had Ken Squire talking about Bernie Sanders. He should stay in. We started out the program with the question, is Donald Trump really trying to lose this election? And we also talked about Bruce Lissman sending out material which tries to link Phil Scott with Governor Shumlin, basically calling Scott the wingman. Does negative campaigning work in Vermont? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. It's a free-for-all with anything that you want to talk about. I've given up on keeping, you know, with the sort of show prep that we have, so give us a call if you've got any comments politically, what's happening nationally or in Vermont. Give us a call. Let's go to Dee in Duxbury. Dee, you're on open mic.
Hi. Well, this isn't going in with the political right now, but since Ken Squire brought up Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, that was really great. I think probably a lot of people don't even know who he is, you know. Okay, and that dovetails into my comment about, do you know that there's a large percentage of American people who don't know why we celebrate the 4th of July?
Or Memorial Day, by the way.
Or Memorial Day. Or Veterans Day. Or, yeah, right, but the 4th of July is coming up, and I'm amazed about how many people don't know. Now, I know Ken Squire knows. I mean, I know he does, because, you know, obviously he does. But there are people, and I don't know if you've ever asked around your friends or acquaintances or people that you meet if they know why we celebrate the 4th of July. If I didn't know, I'd be embarrassed.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think that's the case?
I think it's not being taught in schools now. But also I have a friend who's a little older than I am, and she had no idea until about a year ago. She said, I don't know why we celebrate the 4th of July. Are you serious? You know, I thought she was just kidding.
Doesn't Independence Day kind of give it away?
apparently not. She said, well, I was never interested in history. But go online, take a practice citizenship test. If you want to be a citizen in this country, you got to know.
Dee, thank you very much for your phone call. Let's go to, we got two Freds up here, Tom. Let's go to Fred from North Adamant. Fred, you're on.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
on Bernie and stuff and getting out and stuff, my feelings is that, you know, he was always trying to start a revolution. And I think that some of the Bernie supporters are going to take the ball and go home, you know, Bernie or bust, and vote third party and stuff. But I voted for John Anderson, feel responsible for Reagan. And I think if Donald Trump gets in there, he's going to give us a war. And as soon as possible, he's going to alienate somebody, and we'll be in another war. A bunch of young men and women will die, and it'll be a bad thing. But I think that moving forward, the Bernie whole phenomena and stuff, it's going to trickle down to the local things. People have made connections, networked with other people and stuff, and that, you know, from the viewer of the fence up to Congress and the Senate and stuff, it's going to change the picture of America. The reason he's not getting out for the, you know, it's all about the convention and the platform and stuff. And no, he's not giving up, and I don't think he should. Switching to Phil Scott, take all bets that, you know, Phil Scott's going to lose and stuff, and you'll have a pile of money. This, it reminds me, you know, the primary here reminds me of Fred Tuttle and McMillan, where McMillan spent all the money, and Fred Tuttle walked away. And that's how it's going to be in the primary and in the general election. I don't believe Sue Mintner or any of these people can hold a candle to Phil.
Thanks, Fred. I appreciate it. Fred Tuttle has been coming up a lot today. I brought him up in the first part of the program, and he's come up at least twice. Twice in conversations with this, so three times total. Let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Morning. Hey, I think that Bernie's given the given the country an excellent geography lesson, and that is now people know that Vermont is a part of the United States, not Canada.
Yeah,
you wouldn't believe it. I was biking across the United States, and I was in southern Ohio, and this lady said, "Oh, you're from." I told her I was from Vermont, and she says, "Oh, Canada is such a beautiful place." I said, "Yeah, but Vermont's a beautiful place too. It's in the United States."
Just talk Ben and Jerry's; they'll know where you are.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Fred, thank you for your phone call. Let's go to Brian in Waterbury Center. Brian, you're on open mic.
Hello, I was driving to work this morning listening to the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And I just had a point to make, two points really, is that there's other people running for president besides Hillary and Donald. Mm-hmm. There's a Libertarian Party that had their convention about 2 weeks ago.
And the former governor from New Mexico, right?
I think his name.
Johnson, right.
And so that's the first point. And the second point is why does the press or people in the press just keep mentioning Clinton and Trump? Without mentioning other people running. And that's my point. I'll take your comments off air.
Sure. The reason, Brian, I think, is that nobody really thinks they have a chance. You know, the former governor from New Mexico, not too many people know who he is. It's not like a Ross Perot sort of situation where he ran as an independent and you had a very, very contested election that year. Actually, some say it took so many votes away from the first George Bush that he lost that election for re-election and to Bill Clinton. So I understand, you know, you hit a point. I mean, if you go on a ballot, there's a lot of people that are running for president in various parties, and depending on what state you're in will depend on how many people are running for president. I think the focus has got to be on the major parties. I understand that. It would be interesting if an independent got in and ran as an independent this year. I think an independent would have a decent chance given what is happening out there. So that's my opinion of what's going on and why we aren't paying attention to other candidates on there. They're just not a factor this year, and why spend time, valuable resources on people that aren't going to be a factor in this race. Let's continue with Tom. Do we need another break? We're fine, aren't we? Let's go back to the phone lines and Rob in North Carolina. Rob, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Great, thank you.
Haven't heard much of your program today. Hey, I was just wondering, Bernie's people are pretty upset with Democrats in general and the DNC and the superdelegates. And there's a lot of talk that Bernie is going to try to petition some of these superdelegates to change their vote. I'm wondering, have you heard anything? Has he personally approached Pat Leahy at this point, who is a superdelegate? And I'm wondering if Bernie, who has had a good relationship with Pat Leahy over the years, and they've worked together, if he start, I think he should start with Pat Leahy, because if he can't convince Pat Leahy to come over, forget about it. You know what I'm saying? What do you think?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Rob. You know, at this point, what Bernie Sanders was trying to do is say that if he won your state, then the superdelegates have got to go with the state. I don't know if he's going to be successful in doing that in the national convention, the Democratic National Convention, or not. I think he raises a good point with superdelegates, though, and I think you're going to see a good and healthy debate about superdelegates and whether they have a future in this primary process. So maybe he doesn't get what he wants in the convention, or maybe he does, but I think the issue that he raises is not going to be forgotten, and it is something that is going to continue, at least in the Democratic nominating process and the debate about what are the rules in that process. I also think the Republicans are going to look at, you know, the Republicans have been searching around for their rules, the best, you know, the best help a candidate. And what they did is they went to the winner-take-all rule after the Romney 2012, when it just dragged on for so long with the proportional. Then they came back and found out that the proportionals helped Donald Trump. So now they're trying to figure out which is the best process to go forward with. And that's going to be an interesting and very, very interesting sort of discussion as well. You know, one of the things that we started out with this program with, and it's fascinating to me that some people, I call it conspiracy theorists, really believe that Donald Trump is trying to throw this election. And I just don't buy it, as I said in the beginning. You know, it's just, he ruins his brand by doing that. I just think, you know, Donald Trump is thin-skinned. And, you know, he goes after people because it's about him. And although those characteristics helped him during the primary, I think he's got to be careful that he's going to be extremely vulnerable in the general election. So I've got 1 minute and 30 seconds. I can't take any more phone calls. It wouldn't be right for people to call in here, just to give you a heads up. I'm going to, you know, we've had a lot of interesting discussion today on subjects that I just didn't anticipate. And so we've had a busy week. And what I'm going to do tomorrow is open back up the phone lines, because I enjoy this portion of it. I enjoy listening to what you have to say. So tomorrow, guess what? Tom, we're going to change our direction and open up the phone lines for tomorrow and have a discussion with all of you. And of course, if you wish to hear this broadcast, you can go on to wdevradio.com and go on to the Open Mic podcast. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV Radio News on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond, and of course, streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I want to thank our guests, Jeff Spaulding, Chancellor of the Vermont State College System, and Ken Squire, owner of WDEV.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com, and you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.